You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, this is Shovik and welcome to the Mint TechCetera podcast. I cover technology for Mint, where we try to make boring tech sound cool for you and hope that we don't end up making cool tech sound boring. Tune in as we decode the latest from the world of technology in India and around the world every week. Today's episode will be presented to you by RJ Ayush, who's a radio jockey with Fever FM and hosts his own tech show called Tech Panti. Over to you, Ayush.
How is AI, generative AI, fueling the business transformation for enterprises? Over the years,
groundbreaking technological assets have enabled us to deliver customized and transformative solutions to global businesses. Generative AI, with its innovative capabilities, fuels curiosity and opens new avenues for exploration. Implementing generative AI requires a sound strategy, specialized skills, and data management. Nevertheless, it offers an extraordinary opportunity for businesses, enhancing scalability and providing personalized customer support. So, how can generative AI continue to shape and revolutionize industries? To address these inquiries, let us welcome Akhilesh Iyer. Akhilesh Iyer heads WNS Triange, which is WNS's group for research, analytics, and AI practice. With his strategic expertise, transformative leadership, and global operations acumen, he has propelled WNS to remarkable heights of success. We are thrilled to listen to Akhilesh's wealth of knowledge and explore the world of generative AI. Welcome to our podcast, Mint TechCetera.
Hi, Akhilesh. How are you?
Excellent, Ayush. Very, very excited to talk about generative AI. And one honest confession, none of the questions that you are asking, I'm not giving any answers from ChatGPT or Google Bard. That's the only confession I have.
Fantastic. So Akhilesh, can you tell us about the evolution of generative AI over the years? And what are the key advancements that have contributed to its impressive capabilities?
Great question, Ayush. I think things have changed so fast over the past few decades. It's unimaginable that a few decades back, there used to be these so-called mainframe supercomputers, the size of complete buildings, which would generate calculations that a mere calculator can do in a fraction of a second now. The coin has just flipped. There is a simple command prompt with a few text characters, and it solves problems that could perhaps put a satellite into the moon. But technically, Gen AI is a field, as you know, where an AI algorithm can generate new content from whatever you feed to it by looking at patterns within that. Now, in the past, there used to be a technical term called Markov models or hidden Markov models, now which used to generate simple text. Fast forward a little bit, there is what is called as neural networks, specifically recurrent neural networks, that could generate more coherent sequences. And then the scientists added a mix to it, which is called generative adversarial network. So there is one model which has an input data of, say, 100 questions and answers, and it simulates new questions to fool another model. The other model, regardless of that, tries to answer the question, and then they flip the roles. So each learns from each other over a period of time, and then there's a lot of content that generates. And the whole thing becomes much smarter. And then add to it a term called transformers, which is able to put context. So RJ, you gave a few lines of introduction about me. The transformer is able to figure out that in all of that conversation, you're talking about someone in particular. It's not about some transformation. It's not about some turnaround. It's about a person. Now, that's a context, and the transformers do that. So there has been an evolution of the computing mechanisms that have allowed for generative AI to be so meaningful to us, on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there's been infrastructural changes, data storage. I mean, you need millions of terabytes of data. There's the ability of data storage. There is the evolution of computing power, because you need so much computing power to run an LLM model. It's not even funny. There's the explosion of data everywhere. Everything is being collected. And then the AI ML techniques that I mentioned, right? So all of these have fused together to come and, you know, bring LLM and generative AI to where it is. And today you can do whatever. I mean, the world is at your feet.
True. I mean, asking this question to you, the way you gave an example, a parallel example of a calculator, the time has come where the things of science fiction are actually becoming reality, like a generative AI. Moving on to my next question, Akhilesh. When businesses integrate generative AI into their operational processes, they often face unique challenges. Could you shed some light on the common hurdles they encounter? Any interesting stories that you have to share?
So typically, Ayush, there are three kinds of problems that an organization might face. First is the organizational challenge. But we all know that we're all made up of people still. And so there will be a lot of people challenges. There'll be resistance to adoption. There will be people who want to do something, but they don't have the skills to do that. There'll be agendas at play. Different departments don't talk to each other, etc. There'll be technology know-how that there will be lacking. They don't know how to go about doing it. It's not about putting a prompt into an LLM model and getting a response. It's a little bit more complicated than that. So there'll be technological challenges. There'll be ability to create business cases. I mean, you can solve something so long as it makes sense. If it's going to be far more expensive for very little ROI, it makes no sense, right? And the fourth is the ability to determine what kind of use cases you should use Gen AI for. You shouldn't try and solve every single problem that an organization faces. So how do you prioritize that? So there are these organizational set of challenges. Now, there are inherent challenges in the generative AI LLM models.
Hmm.
Right? The first one is hallucination. Now, oftentimes, I'll give you one example. And this example I'm going to repeat for the sake of continuity. But there's an airline intermediary, let's say, right? We work with or we use airline intermediaries to book tickets, hotels, flights, refunds, etc. Oftentimes, there are hundreds of policy documents behind. So, Ayush, if you were to go and change your tickets somewhere and you think you need a refund, you will go and ask that question to that intermediary. And it needs to know the answer for it by parsing through some 125 policy documents. And if it does not know, then Gen AI should be able to answer the question saying, I don't know, or we'll come back. But Gen AI has the habit sometimes of still trying and giving some answer based on whatever limited response it has. And it may give you rubbish. So you're asking for some refunds, and it may tell you, why don't you book a ticket to the Himalayas instead? Right? So that is hallucination. So there is, the model is assuming things and hallucinating as if it's under an influence of some substance. And
for which there was a corporate company which went through this, right, recently, not naming the company, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's an inherent problem of Gen AI. There's two other things which are very important, bias and fairness. Okay, bias is when the LLM models are trained with some underlying data and it will keep repeating basis that. And therefore, if your underlying data suggests that a certain thing has happened, let's say a train always reaches a certain station at a certain time under certain circumstances, it will keep predicting that it will keep happening all the time. But that may not be the case. There might be a change in weather, there might be a problem in the signal, etc. And it needs to be able to factor in. So if there is underlying bias in the data, there will be bias in the output. And then there is fairness. So this is very, very important. The world is not a fair place, but you want the AI model to be as unbiased and fair as possible, which means suppose there's a demographic which applies for loans. Now, in the past, maybe a lot of that demographic were not eligible for loans and therefore the loans got rejected. But this particular individual actually might necessarily qualify for it. It will be unfair if this individual is rejected basis something. So how do you ensure that there is fairness in the model? And organizations need to ensure that they've got systems for fairness because it's also regulatory mandated and it's just the right thing to do. Right? So bias and fairness is going to be extremely important. There is trust and authenticity. So there needs to be trust in the data that you are generative AI that comes in, and that it needs to be authentic, verifiable. More importantly, it needs to be explainable. Now, between you and I, if both of us go and apply for a loan somewhere or for an insurance policy, what is the basis at which you are given a certain interest rate and I am given a certain interest rate? A bank will need to have some kind of a mechanism to justify the regulators if there is a difference. LLM models, oftentimes that are public LLM models, are trained on underlying data that nobody knows. And therefore, how does the bank trust or explain away the rationale for this? So there needs to be mechanisms that organizations need to develop to extract the output and then verify that it is explainable in some shape and form, right? So explainability is a challenge. And then finally, continuous learning. So if your LLM model has certain underlying data, things change every minute. And so there needs to be a continuous loop. So these are all inherent issues with Gen AI itself that organizations need to be mindful of. And then finally, once you solve for some organization challenges and understanding how you're going to solve for LLM, the third thing is around implementation. Now, you can ask any number of questions to an LLM, but it will all be eventually paid. You ask 100 questions, you're sending 100 tokens. There's that kind of cost. Is there a better way to make myself more efficient? Because if the cost escalates, your business proposal becomes unviable. There may be resource constraints. You may not have the necessary infrastructure, production environments, workflow systems. How do you, decision things? So the same loan example, there is a computing system behind and the Gen AI is fed into that computing system and some agent is reading that and then telling you or me on the phone saying that, sir, you will get it at this interest rate. You know, the whole infrastructure needs to work. There will be concern. There should be user acceptance. I think people who are using the output should trust us. If they don't, they will not use it. Finally, extremely important is data privacy or privacy issues, right? So every organization will need to ensure that they've got necessary safeguards for privacy. So I think these are the three broad structural challenges that organizations will face.
True and perfectly answered. I mean, I now know almost everything that there is to implementation of generative AI in businesses. But I would also want to know, it would be great if you could share some insights on how generative AI empowers businesses to enhance solution scalability and expand their reach to a broader market segment.
That's a great question. Now, I'm scratching my head here. But let me take another business example. And Ayush, business examples sometimes are boring, but sometimes are extremely interesting. We live in busy metros, Mumbai, Delhi, New York, London, Paris, and the traffic is horrible everywhere. And let's say two cars meet with an accident. Now, the insurance company has to look at all the claims because somebody or the other is making a claim saying that my car has got damaged, etc. What is the chance that somebody is making a fraudulent claim? Okay. Now, the Gen AI model, in the past, what used to happen is there are a million claims that an insurance company comes. Some agent is trying to sample them. Okay, so they will say, oh, we can't do a million claims. Let's look at 100,000 claims or let's look at 10,000 claims based on certain rules that they will look at. Then from within that, there will be human biases which will say, this looks like a fraudulent claim because we have noticed that if street number 53 on Fifth Avenue or anything in Baikala in Mumbai comes, there is a chance that it's a fraudulent claim. It may be wrong, but there may be human bias involved. What Gen AI does is takes all of this out of the equation, right? Coupled with proprietary AI models and automation. But now the insurance company can process 100% of the claims, which means all the million claims it will be able to test. Not only that, it will eliminate the human bias by using your own proprietary AI models to check the propensity of fraud. And Gen AI will proper prompt to an agent saying that this looks like a fraudulent claim because of these reasons. So it may also be able to identify the reason. So that's a very good example of how you scale the business from 10,000 claims assessment to a million claims assessment. But there are new use cases also, Ayush. Just imagine a situation where a X-ray scanning machine company not only provides the scanning machine, but because there is so much scans going on, let's say they retain the data, using Gen AI, it can show patterns and train an algorithm and say that for these patterns, the chances that the eye has retinopathic diabetes is very high. Now, the scanning company was never in the business of making that diagnosis. But now maybe that's a model that they may come up with, aiding doctors. They may not be the final authority to make the recommendation that will always be with the doctor, but at least it's a new market that opens up for them. Or we have a website which caters to, let's say, French-speaking countries, and then suddenly they want to go into Mandarin-speaking countries or English-speaking countries. Generative AI can immediately help you enter new markets. So the possibilities are immense. It's our imagination that's our own limitation.
Wow. And we always love hearing about real-world success stories. Do you happen to know any noteworthy examples of generative AI implementations that have truly transformed enterprises? We're actually eager to learn more.
A lot. In fact, as we speak, at WNS and WNS Strange, we're working with at least 60 plus use cases, right? So there is just within my company, 60 plus use cases. Let me start off with the airline intermediary example again. Now, here is this use case where the intermediary has many people manning the phone lines, answering questions of customers who are either trying to do ticket rescheduling, refunds, itinerary change, etc. Now, this airline company has some 1,026 policy documents at the back, which means the person who is manning the phone has to somehow find from 1,026 documents to give an answer to this one person.
Hmm.
What we are doing here using Gen AI is creating a loop where these questions go and chunk. So there is a technology called chunking. So we use a vector graph database where for that question from the 1026, we are able to identify some 5-6 key policy documents that needs to be looked at. Okay, so there is an AI model, there's a vector graph that we do. But after that, the Gen AI actually goes and picks up the information from those 5 documents and comes up with a response saying, Ayush, since you want a refund, you are eligible for this much refund since you're booked at this date, you've lost this money, and this is the way you'll be paid at this point in time. Or you can reuse this money for the next trip that you make, etc., etc., etc. All of this Gen AI does on its own in a fraction of a second. Okay, so this is what it does is people like you and I who are dealing with that intermediary earlier would have to wait for 20 minutes or the next day for an answer to come. Now, within a few seconds, they get the answer. You are happy. The airline is happy. The cost of running the whole operation has reduced. You will want to travel again. Mistakes and errors that would happen in these transactions are reduced. So it's a win-win all along, right? So it completely disrupts the way customer service is handled here. So this is one real-world use case. The second one, Ayush, is on the same car accident. Let's say there's 2 cars that have happened. Now you or one person is driving car A and he makes a claim to his insurance company or her insurance company. But actually the fault is of the other car. And the other car is insured by another company, which means the first insurance company should claim some money from the next one, right? It's called subrogation. So you need to recover that money. In Gen AI, when somebody files a claim, so the first person, person A, writes an email saying this is how it happened, etc., and uploads a photo, Gen AI bases that description and the photo will be able to say the level of damage that there is, Okay, is it heavy, medium, less, etc. That all automatically it is able to do. And based on the description, may be able to suggest that this is where there may be some subrogation opportunity available. Okay, so there is this benefit that happens. And then we plug our own AI models along with it to say, A, is this a car completely total loss? It has to be totaled and replaced. Is there some repairing that happens? And what is the chances of recovery basis the damage that has happened? So this is another case of Gen AI where there is no individual human being who's trying to make an assessment of the level of damage. There is no assessment of whether subrogation, there's no subjectivity there. It is a system, right? And again, 100% of the claims. So all the million claims can be assessed like that. So
fantastic.
So this is a second example, which is, I think, quite good.
Yeah, makes me to think that there's a lot of homework also which needs to be done to teach these Gen AI models. I mean, for individual industries, there would be different case scenarios. So, like asking you this question, that how much effort does it take to train a Gen AI model?
Ayush, you put me in a spot here, but this question we need to ask to all the LLM model makers like Microsoft and Google and etc. But billions and billions and billions of data fields have been fed in to train these models over multiple iterations. The data would have to be stored in the computing engine would have servers which would run into multiple football fields. Okay, for all of this to start making coherent sense. So that is the amount of effort that has gone in training these LLM models to a certain degree. But there are two types or three types of LLM models. There's the large public LLM models. There are also very specific industry like healthcare for insurance, etc., etc. Those are slightly smaller, maybe a few football fields, not too many.
Very nice. So, Akhilesh, generative AI has the potential to deliver personalized and efficient support to its customers or clients. Can you share any interesting examples or anecdotes that highlight how businesses have achieved this using Gen AI?
Oh, absolutely, Ayush. I think the first example I would give is the same example of the travel intermediary. Which is where in the past, a customer would make a phone call about their itinerary changes, refunds, etc. And it would take many, many minutes, sometimes hours, sometimes the travel intermediary or airline or whoever would even ask for a day or two to revert back. Right? And now it happens in a fraction of a second. Everybody is very, very happy. But I'll give you one more example of a very different kind. Now, we are all members of loyalty programs of retailers, of airlines, of so many other things. And the loyalty program, there's a lot of data that these companies collect behind the loyalty program. There's demographic data, there's past transaction data, etc. Based on that, they keep giving offers and stuff like that. If you stay for two nights, we'll give you one night complimentary. If you buy these three things, special offer of fourth thing at 50% discount, so on and so forth. These are all based on segmentations. So they make segments of people who display a certain behavior, who come from a certain demographic, who have a certain transaction history, etc. And they keep create intelligent segments. And there are AI models which run offers for these people. So it simulates offer, what type of offer, at what price, from which channel, etc.
Wow.
But it is in some way a little static in the sense that once the segments are made, the offers are customized and they're given to you. And then based on the way you react to the offers, automatically it goes in a loop and the offers and the segments change a little bit, right? So that's the AI part. So in generative AI, now let's just consider a situation where a customer logs into the website of a retailer or an airline or a hotel, let's say a hotel. And by default, the AI model would have figured that this person needs to be given two nights free stay at this property. Having said that, the person is not taking the bait and is looking for something else. which means that the behavior on the website is real time or different behavior. Right now, there will be a machine learning algorithm which will pick up this behavior. One night special offer with your partner at Goa, etc., which is what actually would make you happy. Now, this was never part of the original plan, but generative AI real time provides customer delight by helping create an offer in combination with an MLT.
Well, makes me to believe that I need to log into such websites to get some offers that I've been waiting for. Moving on, you know, when developing a strategy and business case for implementing generative AI, what critical factors should businesses prioritize? We would love to hear your thoughts on this.
No, I think simple things. First is the business value, Ayush. I mean, we need to know which use cases we need to go after. Now, the insurance example I gave, instead of 10,000 claims, if I'm able to process 1 million claims at a fraction of a time with far more accuracy, eliminating human bias, it's a winner. Or if I am going to reduce the time of my customers calling into my contact center from many minutes or a few hours to seconds, it's a no-brainer, right? So there are multiple areas where you should know the business value, and the cost of implementation will be there, but the value will far outlive that, right? So that's, I think, the first consideration. Second, you want to make sure that all your internal stakeholders are aligned. You want to make sure that you have necessary data available to be able to render the service. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do that. Make sure we understand the timeline to implement a solution, right? So if it's going to take 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, I mean, this is a problem if it's much longer. And so how do you prioritize your use cases? So that's one. Second, use GenAI where it makes sense. Don't use it where it does not make sense. Sometimes your existing automation, NLP, machine learning tools can do the job. Just use that. I mean, you don't need to use tokens and increase costs to do that. So when you're building your strategy, business value, stakeholder buy-in, use case identification, data sufficiency, these are all important things. Change management is extremely important. There is oftentimes change for internal people, organization, technology, processes, and external customers, etc. Make sure we understand the changes that come. Be aware of the regulatory impact on privacy, things like that. Very, very important that we do that. There's obviously the technical issues. You need the necessary hardware and infrastructure. You need to know how to pick up your own proprietary ML models. You need to know that you are going to be able to run a scaled model. Now, 10,000 claims I'm processing versus 1 million, you know, your system should be able to process it. So you should be able to run a scaled operation. And then there is the inherent risks around hallucination, fairness, bias, etc. So look at all of that as well, right? So these are all the things you put in the mix as you define your strategy to become GenAI. But ride the wave upfront. Know it beforehand. Get the right teams in place. Identify the right use cases. Create the budgets and go for it. If you don't do it, someone else.
True. I mean, of course, you did mention like data is crucial, but the quality of data is also crucial for successful implementation of generative AI. How can businesses ensure that the data they use is reliable and accurate, considering its significant impact on outcomes?
It's a great question, Ayush, but the good news here is that data has always been the secret sauce and always the underlying problem, even without GenAI. So even if you're using machine learning models or regular analytics or AI, data was always going to be a key because, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And therefore, you will need the necessary frameworks and mechanisms to ensure you are able to bring the data at the right place, that you've got mechanisms to, you know, check for the data quality. You've got a data quality framework, especially now for Gen AI, that you are able to detect anomalies, outliers, complexities in the data, that you've got automated data quality engines for us to be able to do that. Plus data harmonization, which means let's pick the example of the airline intermediary. There is 1,026 policy documents. Now, what if 15 of those documents or policies undergo a change?
Mm.
Right? Now, that change has to be reflected across the value stream, not only in the underlying data, but on the data that gets fed into my own AI models, which then gets fed into the generative AI models. So data needs to be harmonized. The term is data harmonization, where the single source of truth pervades across the organization for every change that happens. So that's going to be extremely important for us. So data quality frameworks, data quality engines, harmonization, master data management, bringing it all in the right cloud with necessaries, security and guardrails is the way forward. This has been a challenge and an opportunity for enterprises all along. I think it just accentuates the need for Gen AI.
Fantastic. We also know that generative AI often collaborates with other AI technologies like machine learning and natural language processing. How do these technologies complement each other in the context of business transformation? Can you provide some insights into these synergies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in a way, these technologies of NLP and ML are co-opted in the Gen AI technology in some ways. But it might be easier, instead of me giving you a theory, talk through an example. Mm. Right now, there is a multitude of questions. Or let's take the example of you logging into your one of those websites you mentioned. Right now, there is a set of questions that you are going to ask. What is the question pertaining to is formed by a combination of words. My name is RJ Ayush. I live in such and such city. I'm based out of Pune. I have been a member of this loyalty program for the past 25 years, so on and so forth, etc. And then you ask the question. There is a pattern in that question. NLP actually picks up the patterns and brings it and reduces the scope of the query to what you need, right? That gets fed into a machine learning algorithm to say that for RJ Ayush, he falls in this demographic. This is his past transaction history. This is his buying pattern. And therefore, this is the offer that should be given, is a machine learning algorithm. Mm. And then there is also some changes that you display on the website. So the machine learning algorithm picks it, right? Now that gets fed into a Gen AI model, which dynamically creates content and gives you a new offer. So NLP, machine learning, Gen AI, all working in tandem to give you the right solution.
So fantastic.
So that's the way things work. And such examples you will find in almost all use cases of Gen AI, because Gen AI does five things. Typically, it generates new content, it can edit content. If you have large pieces of content, it can create a summary of it. It can help you do question answers. You ask a question, it gives you an answer from an underlying data, and it can classify. Okay, so is it a high damage or is it a low damage? Is it fraudulent? Is it not classification? So it does one of them. But as an input mechanism, there are NLP, ML, and it's co-opted in it, right? So
fantastic. I mean, it takes me to saying this point that the way we interact, I mean, humans interacting with technologies has also changed. Now you've got a name through which you call your phone, you say, "Hey Siri," and then your smartphone responds to you. It might be Bixby, it might be an Alexa. So the way they respond to you is as if some human is responding to you, and you refer to them also as the beings of intelligence, and that's how AI has become. So, Akhilesh, as we look ahead to the future, what are your thoughts on the emerging trends in the field of generative AI and how they might influence business transformations?
So, I'm going to give you a boring answer, but a very relevant one, but then also something that's of interest to us. First and foremost, the technical trends, right? So, let's put that first. LLM models, and you know, you take the big ones like ChatGPT and all of them that we are available, or OpenAI, have multiple LLM models behind them, what will happen now is what is called multimodal generative models. Multimodal generative models will essentially combine multiple types of models at the back end. Today, they are working at the back end separately. In the front end, it's one. Going forward, at the back end also, they will be together. I think it will make it more efficient and will make our interaction with them far more effective and nicer. There will be frameworks like LangChain. Okay, LangChain is a technical term. Now, what happens is sometimes you are interacting with one LLM model and suppose it does not give you the answer. Then you will have to try and repeat that with another LLM model. And then with another if it doesn't suffice. LangChain will allow you to connect these LLM models and allow your query or whatever to pass through all of them so that you are able to use multiple of them in some kind of a network and get your answer. Right? So LangChain is that technology. But then there is also the other features, like there will be very industry specific or use case specific LLMs. So today we've got these large open AI, you try and ask any question, it tries and give you an answer, etc. But they'll be very specific for healthcare diagnostics or for claims or for something around finance, etc. So there'll be very specific industry or functional domain specific LLM models which are going to emerge. What it does is it reduces the size of the LLM models, therefore the need for computing space, storage, all of that. It is more targeted, which means the quality of the response is better, more accurate, less hallucination, less, you know, those kind of things. And the cost is also lower. So there are developments of those kind that will happen. And then there is, of course, there is a combination of hybrid models. So there will be, like we spoke, right, machine learning and generative AI together. I think they will all come in pre-packaged mechanisms for particular use case, like the use case I spoke to you about. So there will be these that will start coming in, right? And so these are all changes that will be there, and the nerds and the geeks get very excited with all of that. But for the common user, that means there is ease of getting responses to what they want, ease in customer service, ease in insurance experience, getting your loans passed, for regulators and authorities to find out anti-money laundering cases much more effectively. There will be cases where customer service will start getting much seamless. Shipping companies will be able to ensure shipping that gets done much more effectively without baggages being lost. I mean, there are so many possibilities that are likely to happen. I think the important is the regulation around it. We want to make sure that data privacy is maintained, there is bare explainability to everything, that there is fairness and unbiasedness in the models. And all of that is a heady mix of opportunities and challenges for all of us to gravitate to. But I think the opportunities far outweigh the challenges. For businesses to adopt, for service providers like us to be able to innovate and come up with new use cases and solutions. And so I see this very, very positively. I think skill sets for employees will improve. There'll be so many new career opportunities that people will get. I mean, it's just, I think, a series of opportunities across the landscape. I think governments will be able to provide services in a much more effective manner. So we can get started. We'll have another program just on that.
Oh, fantastic. And thank you so much for ending this episode today on such a bright note and not a controversial one that AI is going to take all of our jobs. Thanks for saying that we're going to create more jobs. I'd like to thank you, Akhilesh, for being a part of Mint Etcetera. This episode was brought to you by NASSCOM.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was mine. And Ayush, thank you for making this interaction so lively and nice and highly interactive. Appreciate all the questions you've asked. Thank you so much.
So that's that for this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed what we discussed. And if you have suggestions in terms of what more we can cover as part of our podcast, do let us know. You can catch me at Distant Vicinity on Twitter and at Shovik Das on Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next time.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.